Well, welcome to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary, and I'm very happy to say that Christ has been risen and is in an ongoing risen state, ege gertai, as Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15. And that means that all bets are off, everything is new, and as a sign of new life, the computer is working. So we apologize to our online Greek Club family. I think we've been offline for a few weeks, but our valiant IT people, like every other churchly institution, are shorthanded and understaffed. And without them, well, I certainly would go down to Sheol, and there's my Hebrew word for the day. And we're in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, right? We are, I believe, at basically verse 13, chapter 9, verse 13. And Paul is still waxing eloquent about the collection and the Corinthians' participation in it. And what he's just said in verse 11 is something like, as you are being enriched in every way for all generosity, which is working through us, or perhaps will work through us, thanksgiving to God. So their generosity, Paul and his compadres are going to bring the collection to Jerusalem, and then all along the way, thanksgiving, right? And then I do believe we translated quickly verse 12. That is to say, because the ministry of this service, this liturgia, is not only supplying, note the periphrastic Amy plus the participle there, the needs of the saints, but also, repeat the linking verb, is abounding through the thanksgivings of many, or maybe through the many thanksgivings to God. And then the next sentence starts, and as we'll see, we have a participle with no referent. There's a number of these in 2 Corinthians, but we'll make it work. But first we'll read it, verse 13 in Greek. And we'll just do verse 13. So something like this. Diates dokimes tes diakonias tautes, doxadzantes tantheon, epite hypotage tes homologias humon, eis ta evangelion tu Christu, kai, reach back for the epi again, haplatete tes koinonias eis autus, kai eis pantas. As you can see, there's no real verb in the sentence. Doxazantes is a present participle, active masculine, plural nominative, here in verse 13. And we're probably going to have to supply as a referent, sort of according to sense, the many with which the prior verse ended. It's the wrong case. It's genitive, not nominative. But again, we've had a number of these happen in 2 Corinthians recently, either participles with reference which are very distant, or else you kind of have to just figure out who's doing the glorifying here. And so we'll take it that way as kind of they actually say this in the grammar, as a construction according to the sense of it. So as the many glorify God. And how do they glorify God? They do it through the the ducky may, the proven character of this ministry. So again, Paul is thinking ecumenically, probably, and as others see the believers giving for the support of the Mother Church in Jerusalem, they'll give thanks to God and glorify God. So the participle phrase dia tes dokimes modifies doxazantes, the participle. It gives the sort of the means or agency through which they glorify God. And then we have a kind of a double epi plus the dative construction. So the first dative is right next to it, epite hypotage, and then drop down on the next line and haplatete. The only thing I can figure out what to do with that is I think it's actually a second dative that's being governed by epi. So epi plus a dative, as you probably know, is very flexible, but it can have a sort of a on the basis of or because sort of meaning. So we'll take it that way. They'll be glorifying God because of, this is an interesting phrase, the submission of your confession. Now, the translations at least take this next prepositional phrase as modifying confession. So, the submission of your confession, which is toward or on behalf of or for the gospel of Christ. And that the sense of it must be something like this. The Corinthians are willing to be submissive and to be subject to the needs of others, right? And that's a part of their confession of the gospel. See? So the sense of it is something like this. By the way, it's a very interesting experience to try to, you know, work with the Greek as carefully as one can, and then you look at the English translation, and you feel better because you thought it was awkward Greek, and then you look at the English translation and you say, how did they get that? You know, so it's really a little bit difficult. But anyway, they're glorifying God because of the submission of your confession and the, here we have the word again, the sincerity or generosity, the hyplotete, dative singular, of the participation, presumably your participation, which is, again, unto them and unto all. So again, it's a very interesting ecumenical appeal that it's not quite unique to the Corinthian letters, but they really need to know that they are part of the larger church. Again, once we decide what to do with the participle, then we actually just have a bunch of prepositional phrases which either modify the participle or sometimes they modify the noun right in front of the prepositional phrase. So, for instance, at the very end of the verse, it's probably participation which is toward them and toward all. So again, it's a little interesting, and it, not that I, you know, really know enough to have a strong opinion on this, but whenever I read 2 Corinthians or something like Thessalonians, you compare it to a letter of Paul that you know a little bit better. You think that, oh, I think the scribe really had something to do with this. Or maybe the co-author, Timothy or Silas or whoever. So that it's probably a little bit of a false statement to claim that there's something like a Pauline style. Because the letters actually just differ one from another. Not horribly radically, but this is, as they say in Minnesota, a little different. Right, so, and people from Minnesota insist that they don't talk that way, but I know that they do. So, hey, Josh, you're not from Minnesota, are you?
Michigan.
Okay. Okay, then they talk like this up there in Michigan, don't they? Up there, at the U. That's right. Questions about verse 13. All right. Yeah, Will, please.
What is the sense of that word, dokimēs? The approved, the tested.
Yeah, testedness.
Well,
dokimazo, as you know, means to discern or examine, and it's what happens after you've done that, right? Interestingly, in 1 Peter, we're going to get the related adjective dokimios, which means something very similar. It's usually translated proven character, authenticity, maybe, although that's a little bit far afield. In other words, they're going to see that this ministry, comports with the gospel, right? And it reflects the nature of the church, and so it has dokimē.
Would you say the translation is authentic, sir?
Well, it might be, yeah. Again, the lexicon just gives genuineness or proven character as a gloss, right. So, yeah, good. Anything else on verse 13? Okay, all right. And let's see, yes, we're still recording. I'm very happy about that. So, verse 14, and we'll do 15 as well. Would you like to have a real verb? Sorry. No verbs. We have a genitive absolute, however. That's pretty close. Verse 14. Kai auton de eze hyper humon epipothunton humas diaten hyper ba luzon karin tutheu f humin. And then at the end, karis totheo epite an ek di egeto autu dorea. And now we have auton, genitive plural, right? And then track down a few words and you get epipothunton. Epipotheo means to long for or to desire. And this is a genitive absolute. And we'll translate it. And, or even, and even they are desiring you. Humas would be the accusative object of the participle right there behind it. And they are desiring you, de eze, this is one of the words for prayer, and it's dative singular, in prayer, or by means of prayer, on behalf of you, as they long for you. And why would they do that? Because of, dia plus accusative, the hyperbolic, the abounding grace of God, that's a present participle from hyperbalo, not too hard, the abounding grace of God upon you, plural. And then at the end, grace, or in an expression like this, thanks, supply the verb, be to God, epi plus the dative again, on the basis of, because of, the dorea of him, his gift which is an adjective that you have to look up, unless you know the English translation, inexpressible. An ek diegetos means inexpressible. So this is, again, we don't really have a main verb. We sort of have to hang it off the participle in verse 13. So people are glorifying God and or even as they are longing for you in prayer on behalf of you because of the abounding grace of God which is upon you. Thanks be to God on the basis of his inexpressible gift. Lots of prepositional phrases again. Yep, Will?
Can you hang the participle in 14 off the participle in 15, which is hanging on something?
Exactly. I don't know what else to do with it. That's right. Nice summary. Yeah, right, right. When the play breaks down, Will, you drive the bucket. Yeah. No, it's really quite remarkable. And we're going to get another. I thought I had another one of these hanging participles coming up here in chapter 10. But I, you know, God bless Henry Alford, who's waiting in the grave for the resurrection of the body, low now about 130 years. But he actually helped me with the referent on that one. It was about five lines away. But it's really an interesting, and at least for my money, a little irregular use of participles. He just kind of throws them at you. So, yeah, good. Anything else? And a milestone, we finished chapter 9, right? Now, if we went with some of the reconstructions of 2 Corinthians, we could stop here, right? Because the tone of chapters 10 through 13 fairly quickly becomes more severe. Okay, you know, this is pretty happy. Oh, you're going to do the collection. You know, Titus is happy, everybody's happy, see. But then it gets a little stern, especially as you got into 11 and 12. And so one of the theories, which I don't think has won wide acceptance, is that although Paul wrote chapters 10, 11, and 12, and 13, some people actually postulate that this is the sorrowful letter. In other words, it's a separate letter, which has been joined to the end of 2 Corinthians. But it's the Easter season, so we won't believe that. And I don't think there's actually any manuscript evidence for it, but that doesn't stop scholars from publishing articles and thereby gaining tenure, right? So we don't have tenure anymore, do we, Reed? Yeah, I didn't think so. So they can get rid of us whenever they want to, right? Okay. So, right. Well, if you go, I go. No, you're supposed to say the same thing. You're supposed to, like, man, thanks be to God for his unexpressed gift. Yeah. So. All right.
The other feeling
That's right. It's all, we're all lay loaning here. That's right. Yeah. Okay. I knew it was. All right. Chapter 10, verse 1. A little emphatic at the beginning. Autosta ego palos para kalohumas diates prautetas kai epi ekeas tu Christu. Hus kata prosopon men tapenas en humin. Ap onde tharo ace humas. Okay, parakalo would get it done, right? I exhort, or I encourage, probably exhort. But he names himself and he adds the pronoun ego, and then the third person pronoun here is emphatic, right? So I, Paul, myself. He's really emphasizing that his apostolic authority, his presence, his personal message here. I exhort you. Now, remember that you probably remember this little morphology point. When you get contract verbs in the dictionary, you get the dictionary form, you get parakaleo, but you never see the unaccented form in the Greek text. It's always contracted, right? So that's why you get parakalo. And that could be a subjunctive. I think it'd be the same form. It'd be a present subjunctive active or a present indicative active, but I think it's always taken here as a... wouldn't make all that much sense as a subjunctive. So I myself, Paul, exhort you through the praeutes, the meekness, and the, it's kind of a same semantic feel sort of adjective, forbearance or yieldingness or patience, something like that, of Christ. Now, the hos, the relative pronoun, is masculine singular. It could modify Christ, and that's actually the way I took it at first, to be honest. But I couldn't make the rest of it make sense, so I checked some of the translations, and they take it as referring back to Paul. Okay? So, I, Paul, exhort you through the gentleness and yieldingness of Christ, I, Paul, who, in person, according to face, literally, on the one hand, no verb, supply, am lowly or humble among you, but op on, this is the present participle of op ame. If you cover the op with your finger, as they say, I'm going to Texas at the end of this week, and you see just on, that's the participle of ame, the present participle. Op ame means to be absent. See? So literally, who according to face, who in person am lowly among you, but when I am absent, I am bold toward you. Now, what's going on here? I think the way this is normally taken, and it's all in context, is this is how Paul has been characterized by those who oppose him. Oh, while you're away, you write these powerful letters, but when you're with us, you're tapenos, you're lowly. See? Because he's about to go on to talk about how he's afraid he's going to have to be bold with them when he arrives and finds out that they're not cooperating and that there are still teachers who are opposing him. So that's the sense in which it's often taken, and you know the translation would support that. So again, to do the whole verse again, I myself, Paul, exhort you through the meekness and lowliness of Christ. I, Paul, who in person, on the one hand, am humble among you, but when I am absent, I am bold toward you. And then it goes on from there, because he starts to talk about those who are opposing him. Questions, comments? Will, please.
It's interesting to see the variation that he uses linguistically. After the hos, there's kataproson.
Yep.
And then what matches that up in the next is the participle.
I know, right.
And then you have tapenos without a verb, you know, I am supplied, and then you have a verb.
Right.
And then you have en,
and ace. I know, exactly. I know, it's not like carefully balanced or something like that. Yeah, that's right. That's right. So... yeah, and by the way, tharo is from thareo, which means to be brave or to have courage. But you're right, it looks a little unbalanced for what it's worth. So, okay. All right, let's get, this was a little tricky in here, at least it was for me. Verse 2, Deomaida, tame paron thoresai, te pepoi theise, he lagidzamai talmesai, epitinas tus lagidzamenus hemas hos katasarka peripatuntas. Deomaida means I beseech or ask. It can mean I pray if God is the object of it. Here it's probably the readers. But I beseech, and now what do I beseech? Take ta, me, and tharezai together. In a sense, bracket out paron for a minute. I beseech the not to be bold, which would be an infinitive of indirect discourse. I beseech you, understand, that I am, that I not be bold. It's like he's pleading with them. He doesn't want to have to be bold. That's kind of the sense of it. And then paron is from par eme. If ap eme means to be absent, par eme means to be present. And we actually get our word parousia from this. So, yeah, it's the noun which means to arrive or to be present. And I beseech you that I might not, when I am present, be bold in the confidence with which I reckon to dare. Literally. I think that I will dare to do this. And why would he do that? Because of certain who are reckoning us as, take the next participle as a substantive, as those who walk according to the flesh. These are the opponents, those who reckon us as those who walk according to the flesh. And again, as I mentioned before, the letter actually takes a noticeable turn towards sternness and rebuke here at the beginning of chapter 10. So, finishing up that, and then maybe we'll stop here. Again, what Paul beseeches is that he not have to paresai, and the reason he would have to do that with the confidence that he could use is the certain ones who are reckoning us, Paul and his apostolic co-workers, as those who walk according to the flesh. Will, you mentioned the balance thing, you know? Take a look at the very next verse. He actually says, for walking in the flesh, we do not wage war according to the flesh. See that? It's just really interesting. He's kind of playing with words here a little bit. And then this is the famous passage where Paul talks about overthrowing fortresses and taking captive every thought to Christ. I mean, that's the kind of the severity of the tone that's about to develop here. So, but any questions or comments on verse 2? Is that at least good for now? Okay, that's enough for the week of Easter 1. Christ is risen.
He is risen indeed.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.